can feel your heartbeat. I can feel inside of mine. I can feel your heartbeat. I can feel it in mine. I can feel your heartbeat. Deep inside of mine. Any time of the day or night, as we travel this winding road, you gave me the greatest gift. You made my heart my home. You made my heart my home. I can feel your heartbeat. I can feel it in mine. I can feel your heartbeat. Deep inside of mine, I can feel your heartbeat. I can feel it in mine. I can feel your heartbeat. Deep inside of mine. Any time of the day or night, as we travel this winding road, you gave me the greatest gift. You made my heart my.
Beloved Book One, Joshua, also known as Chao Chu, was born in 778. When he first met Nansen, Joshua entered the master's room in the monastery. Nansen was lying down, and his first question to Joshua was, "Where have you come from?" "From the Ju Hsiang Temple," replied Joshua. Ju Hsiang means holy image. "Do you still see the holy image?" Nansen asked. "No, I don't," replied Joshua. "I only see the Tathagata lying down." At this, Nansen got up, saying, "Are you a monk who has a master, or one without a master?" "With a master," replied Joshua. "Who is your master?" Nansen asked. "Early spring is cold," said Joshua. "I am so glad that you are well." Nansen called the senior monk and said, "Give him special treatment."
Munisa, Josu is one of those exceptional people. Who become enlightened without any formal initiation. They are nobody's disciple. It is a very exceptional case. But the story of Josu is going to be very beautiful. His every statement is so poetic, so pregnant, that unless you hear in utter silence, you will miss its fragrance, its meaning, It's penetrating insight into the reality. Josu is one of the most loved masters in Zen tradition. There have been great masters, but nobody has been loved so much as Josu. And he deserved it. His working on people, on disciples, was so soft, so delicate, that only a poet can manage that. A great craftsmanship in carving out of the stones of humanity, Buddhas. Every man is just a big rock. It needs a craftsman, a great artist, a sculptor, who with loving hands removes all that is unessential and leaves only that which is absolutely essential. That absolutely essential is our Buddha. You will see the working of Josu and you will fall in love with the man. In this anecdote, Manisha has brought Josu, also known as Chao Chao, was born in 778. When he first met Nansen, Josu entered the master's room in the monastery. Nansen was lying down, and his first question to Josu was, "Where have you come from?" It has to be understood that the same questions have been asked by different masters to different disciples again and again. They don't mean exactly what you understand. When Nansen says, lying down, where have you come from? It does not mean that he is asking his address. He is asking his original source. He is asking from where suddenly you have appeared into existence. Where you have been before your birth? Where you have been before your parents were born? Certainly somewhere. Josu said, from the Jui Sangha temple. Replied Joshua, Jushyang means holy image. Now there is something to be told to you. Which is not directly said in this anecdote. There used to be a very ancient temple, Jushyang, meaning holy image, a temple of Buddha. But it has, through natural disaster, disappeared in an earthquake. That must have been before Josu was born. His statement that he is coming from Jushyang temple and Jushyang temple exists no more in Japan. Earthquake is a daily experience. That's why in Japan wood and bamboos have become so important. You cannot make houses of marble. Any moment the earthquake can come and then it will be very dangerous. It will kill. So you can make only very thin walls most of the walls are made of paper and you have to use very light weight material so even if the earthquake comes it cannot kill you. Just because of those earthquakes, bamboo has taken a special significance in the Japanese life. Josu saying that he is coming from Jushyang temple means that he remembers his past life. That he was a priest in the Jushyang temple, which exists no more. Do you still see the holy image? Nansen asked, because it was said that that temple had a really beautiful image. Just because of earthquakes in Japan, they started making Buddha statues of wood. India has never known any images of wood. But China and Japan has to change from marble to wood. the wooden image may survive an earthquake. It is not so hard. It is soft. But a stone image is bound to get shattered. Nansen asked him, he did not say anything about his past life. He could see that what he is saying is right. When you encounter a master, before you tell him anything about your being, he knows it. You cannot lie. You can only be authentic and true. Nansen did not ask for any proof, for any validity, for any argument, because that temple has disappeared long before. On the contrary, he asked, do you still see the holy image? We have heard it had a very beautiful image of Buddha, which is destroyed. Do you still see it? No, I don't, replied Josu. I only see the Tathagata lying down. Nansen was lying down. Now, without saying directly that you are the Buddha, now what I have to do with any holy image? This subtleness, this beauty, Josu says, I only see the Tathagata. Tathagata is another name of Gautama Buddha. Lying down in front of me. Who cares about images? When you are facing the Buddha himself, all that is implied in it. He has already accepted Nansen as an enlightened being. At this, Nansen got up, saying, are you a monk who has a master or one without a master? Seeing Josu's great insight that he declares that the Tathagata is lying in front of him, who bothers about images? It is not an ordinary man. Nansen simply has to got up and ask, are you a monk who has a master or one without a master? With a master. Remember the word with. He is saying, I am already with the master. What you are talking about? He did not say, I don't have a master. He did not say, I have a master. He said, with a master. That's why I told you that he never became formally a disciple. His clarity, his enlightenment is so close when he came to nonsense that there was no need for him to be initiated. He is going to explode into light any moment. The season was right, the time was right. Any moment the fruit is going to fall down from the tree as it becomes completely ripe. It is only a question of few moments. His answer is of tremendous beauty. He does not say, I don't have a master. He does not say, I have a master. He says, with a master. Replied Josu, who is your master? Nansen poked him whether he is simply talking like a parrot or really he knows. Early spring is cold, said Josu, I am so glad that you are well. He did not answer the question, who is your master, but simply indicated that I am with a master. Early spring is very cold, and I am so glad that you are well. Such an indirect and delicate, so sweet an answer. Nansen called the senior monk and said, give him a special treatment. He should not be thought just an ordinary monk. There were thousands. Give him a special treatment. He is almost enlightened. And he does not need any guidance. Just a special treatment means give him opportunity, space, love, an atmosphere of friendliness, so he can blossom into a flower. He is already bursting to be a flower. He cannot remain a bud longer, so give him a special treatment. On both the sides, it is a very special encounter. Nansen did not ask him to become a disciple. He accepted him as a guest. He gave him the same treatment as he would have given to an enlightened person. Neither Josu asks Nansen that accept me as a disciple. There was no need. Nansen will do everything that is necessary. All these formalities of being a disciple are put aside. He can see Nansen, his radiant Buddhahood, and he is absolutely satisfied that just sitting by his side is enough. No formality is needed. On both the sides it is understood that it is an informal relationship. Josu is a master soon to reach to its ultimate peak, and Nansen is happy to give him a special treatment. It is very rare, perhaps the only case, because I have not come against any case in which the master says, give him a special treatment. But it rarely happens that such a ripe person comes. Even if he had not come, he would have become a Buddha. Now that he has come, it does not mean that Nansen should take advantage of his coming and make him his disciple. All those are marketplace values. Nansen is happy that he is going to flower soon, and Josu is happy that Nansen is well, healthy. And I have found a living Buddha. Nothing is said directly, but everything is understood clearly by both. Soseki, a Zen poet, wrote, at those times when I cannot decide the way back, where I came from, anywhere I go becomes the road home. He is saying, you don't know from where you have come. Don't be worried. Just go on. Any road is going to end up into your home. In this world, you should think of a center and a circumference. From the center to the circumference, you can join many different lines. You don't know from where you have come. You don't know the center. No need to worry.
just stick to one path that is going inwards and you will reach. So see ki is very representative. It is the case with everybody. You don't know your center, and I go on insisting, go to the center. And I know perfectly well that you don't know your center, so where you will go? But I know that wherever you go, just go. If you go with your full energy, then you are going to end up at the very source of your being. This is such a valid experience of thousands of mystics. There is no anxiety about it. I have not told you where is the center. I know only one thing: if you go inwards with your totality and urgency, you will reach it. Nobody has ever missed. The center pulls you the moment you are total and there is urgency. The center itself pulls you towards itself. You don't go, you are being pulled. Just you have to be together. That togetherness is the problem. People are so fragmentary that even when I say totality, urgency, you think perhaps it is for somebody else. I am not going to die at this moment. But that somebody else may be you. Some moment you are going to die. Why not this moment? Who knows? And in the moment of death, if you have not been going and coming in and out, and you have made the path clean from the circumference to the center, in the moment of death you will not be able. It has to be done when you are alive, fully alive, that you can gather all your energy. And go towards the center. Totality and urgency are the absolute prerequisites. If you go in a lousy way, just with a curiosity in the mind, let us see what is in, you will not enter in. A curious mind has no way inwards. to reach to your center, a tremendous intensity is needed. You have to gather yourself, all that you have, into a single spearhead. Then don't be worried, take speed, and wherever you reach will be the center of your being. You cannot go anywhere. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagwan, does where we have come from have some significance in relation to where we are going? No, Manisha, because it is the same place. From where you have come from and to where you are going, it is the same place. These are not two places. So there is no question of any significance. There is no need to bother from where you have come. That is a long route, very long route. Few people have done that. And that creates a tremendous anguish that you cannot even conceive. One life is enough to make anybody insane. And remembering backwards other lives, and you don't know how many hundreds or thousands of lives you have lived, because for 4 million years you have been here on this planet. And that is also not the end. Those who have been concerned on that problem, it is a necessary question that from where we came to this planet and in what way. Life must have come to this planet from another planet, which either was under a natural disaster, dying, or by the beings who lived there destroyed it by creating something like nuclear weapons. But something must have happened on some planet. There are 500 planets on which life exists. We must have come as seeds from some other planet. So even if you go backwards, which is a very difficult process, but possible, if you are stubborn enough like Mahavira, he is a very stubborn man, I don't think there is any other parallel. He lived naked and he will not speak. For 12 years he was absolutely silent, so silent that one day he was standing by the side of a river under a tree meditating, and he will never meditate sitting. Simply because sitting is a very comfortable position. He did not like Gautam Buddha's posture, that is very comfortable. In that comfortable posture, there is much possibility of your falling into dreams, into sleep. But standing, it is very difficult to fall into dreams or sleep. You have to remain awake. He is the only man who has meditated standing. So he was meditating under the tree, and a man has brought his cows to the river, and as the cows were drinking water and Mahavira was standing by the side under the tree, somebody came running to the man who has brought almost 100 cows and told him that your house is on fire, you are required immediately. But to leave these 100 cows in the forest, he saw a good point that this man is standing here. So he told Mahavira that you are standing here anyway, just keep a little watch of my cows and I will be coming back soon. He did not bother even to think that Mahavira has not answered. And he had no idea who he is. And Mahavira was in his meditation. He did not bother about anybody's cows. He did not bother about his own kingdom. He has left it. He has to look after the cows. And the cows went into the shed under the trees behind the hedges. When the man came back, there was not a single cow. And the man was standing. He asked, "Where are my cows?" And he will not speak. He said, "You are a strange fellow. Do you hear me or not?" But he remained just like a stone. The man said, "My God, it seems he is deaf and dumb both. Neither he speaks nor he listens. And I left my cows in his care and all are gone. And the forest is deep with wild animals. And how I am going to find 100 cows alone?" But he went into the forest to look. But the cows has not gone very far. They were just behind Mahavira. The resting under big trees, when they have rested there, they again came back close to Mahavira. The man came back from the forest very frustrated. There was not a sign of a single cow. And here he saw all 100 cows standing by the side of Mahavira. He said, "This man seems to be a thief. He was playing a really great game. To me, he was pretending that he is deaf and dumb. So I go into the forest, and he has gathered meanwhile all the cows. If I had gone farther, he would have escaped. He was just waiting for the sun to set." Just pure imagination of his own, he became so angry that he took 2 pieces of wood and hammered into Mahavira's ears that, "I will give you a lesson. This deafness, this dumbness, now you will be really deaf." Still Mahavira stood there, he did not say anything. Both the ears were gone, blood was flowing. The story is tremendously beautiful. At this point, it seems it becomes more metaphorical. The god of the clouds and the lightnings in Indian mythology is called Indra. Indra was seeing what was happening, and he was much concerned that an innocent man who has not done anything is being punished without reason and rhyme. So Indra came down from the clouds and told Mahavira that, "You have decided to remain for 12 years silent. You will not survive if such things go on happening. I can appoint 2 bodyguards who can look after you." This dialogue must have happened just mind to mind, because Mahavira would not speak. But mind to mind, he said to Indra that, "I am grateful that nature, and you represent nature, takes care of the innocent. But don't be worried. It won't happen again and again. It has not happened before. And I cannot afford 2 bodyguards. I want to be absolutely alone, and these ears and these eyes and this body is going to be burnt on a funeral pyre one day. So what is to be worried about? Indra said, you are very stubborn. And Mahavira told him, without being stubborn, I cannot enter into my past lives. These 12 years of silence are just an effort to pierce all barriers and reach to the place from where I have come. Unless I know from where I have come, how I can go back to the source? How I can make the circle complete? That was Mahavira's attitude. First, you have to know from where you have come. But that is not my attitude, because there is no need to get into that unnecessary trouble. It is not small, it is tremendous. Because it is not only remembering, it is reliving your past lives. Everything becomes so complex and dense. You are surrounded by black clouds upon clouds. You need a tremendous willpower to go on and on to find the place from where you have come. This is unnecessary torture. And I am never in favor of any unnecessary torture. I have heard a man driving his car close to New Delhi ask an old man who was sitting under a tree collecting wood that how far is New Delhi? The old man said, the way you are going, if you go directly, it is very far. You will have to go around the whole earth because you have left Delhi 8 miles behind. Now it is up to you. If you are stubborn, then go ahead. If you are sensible, just reverse the car and go back. My approach is when the thing can be done in a simple and without any torturing, it is absolutely absurd. You forget about from where you are coming. One thing is certain, you have come. Now the best way and the easiest way is to look where we are going. Because ultimately you will find the point where you reach is also the point from where you have come. This is the way how life becomes a perfect circle. So I don't see any necessity, Manisha. In remembering from where you are coming. But both Buddhism and Jainism, only two religions, have worked ways how to enter into the past. Jainism has gone very deep into the science of remembering the whole past and because of this arduous methodology adopted by Mahavira, Jainas have remained in a very small minority. Who is going to suffer so much life in itself is enough suffering. Why invite more suffering that you have forgotten, that you have passed? How many wives you had? Just remembering all those wives will not give you any insight but only migraine. How many husbands? All kinds of idiots. And just to remember them will be living a ghost life. There is no need. Buddhism tried a little but did not go very far into it. After Buddha, very few monks tried, but it never became a speciality of Buddhism. But Jainism is very particular. Buddhism became a world religion. The whole Far East became Buddhist, while Jainism remained a small community in India. Only 35 lakhs is the number today. If Mahavira has converted one couple 2500 years before, that one couple would have produced 35 lakhs by this time. So you can understand, Mahavira could not convince many people. He was showing such an arduous way that only few adventurers who love the impossible became interested in him. Buddha and Mahavira were both contemporaries. Buddha's path is more soft, more humane. Mahavira is absolutely dry, very stern. Buddha's path moves through a garden. Mahavira chooses to move through deserts, where even drinking water will not be available. But just different, unique personalities. Manisha, you need not be unnecessarily trying to find out from where you come. You already have migraine. Do you want it more? Poor Manisha suffers from migraine. I have suffered from migraine for almost 15 years. So I know what it means. It is almost as if your head is splitting in two. The desire arises to hit the head against the wall. But a strange incident happened. I was in Jalgaon, very close from here. And it is one of the hottest places in summer. And I had just reached, it must have been 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was so tired and I had a migraine, so I told my host that first I would like to take a shower. So I went into his bathroom. And they have their tapes wrongly fitted. So I thought it is cold water and it was hot water. And I turned it full on my head. And then I jumped because it was not cold. It was absolutely hot, but in that jump, I forgot about the migraine. Since then, it has not come. What happened, I don't know. Just I simply forgot. The shock was so much. That day I understood the wise saying that if you have a small trouble, the only way to cure it to find a bigger trouble, then you will forget about it. That day I understood why Mullah Nasruddin used to have his shoes one number less the owner of the shoe shop told him again and again that why you suffer? You always come limping and again you ask for the number that is not for you. It is one number less. And the whole day, the whole town knows how much suffering you are going through. Just think, one number less shoe. Nasruddin said, you don't know the philosophy behind it. Because of this shoe, no trouble, no anxiety touches me. It is such an anxiety that I don't have anything left except the shoes and waiting to die. Nothing else matters. And secondly, when I reach in the home by the evening, and as I take the shoes off, what relief! From where you can get that relief? It is almost what he was doing unknowingly. The est program. First 8 hours you cannot go to the bathroom. After 2-3 hours it starts becoming difficult. And there comes a moment that you cannot contain any longer. But you have committed to the program and you cannot get up and go to the bathroom. The bathroom is locked. And everybody will laugh at you that you are not courageous enough. So everybody is trying to be courageous enough. Then suddenly somebody in spite of himself just looks down and he sees that what he is doing. He does not want to do it, but now it is not under his control. The bladder can contain only a certain quantity of water. Now it is a flood. But it brings such a great relief. And once one person does it, everybody else is doing. And they tell to their friends that it is something to experience. The relief. We have never known such relief. So Manisha, there is no need to know such kinds of relief. simpler ways are available and I'm in favor of the simple and the obvious, just find out where you are. That is the point from where you started going out and to where you have to go back. Your original source is also your ultimate goal. Now it is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Poor Sardar Gurdayal Singh has to wait so long and contain himself. I know him for 35 years. He would have become enlightened any day. But just because of the jokes, he is a joke addict. He thinks, if I become enlightened, then what about tomorrow's jokes? So postpone enlightenment is not something that you are going to lose. Any day you can become enlightened. But meanwhile, enjoy the jokes first. Mrs. Wimple and her little boy, Willie, get onto the bus. She pays one fare and walks off down the bus, towing Willie by the hand. "Just a minute, lady," says the conductor. "You will have to pay the fare for your little boy too. But he is only 3 years old," protests Mrs. Wimple. "Well," replies the conductor, "he looks more like 7 to me." "But he can't be," cries Mrs. Wimple. "I have only been married for 4 years." "Look, lady," replies the conductor, "I only want your money, not a confession." There is a nasty accident at the London Lunatic Asylum when one of the inmates falls down the well. Loony Larry sees the situation and suddenly, to everyone's amazement, lowers himself down to the water on the end of a rope. After an incredible effort, Loony Larry manages to pull his fellow inmate out. The media get to hear about the event and the Channel 4 news are soon at the lunatic asylum to interview Loony Larry, the hero. that was an outstanding act of human courage and compassion, says Walter Wickett, the TV reporter, into his microphone. "Thank you very much," replies Loony Larry, grinning sheepishly. "And can you tell me," continues Walter, "right now, where is the man you saved?" Says Larry, pointing to the flagpole, "I just hung him out to dry." "My God," says Dr. Snooze, the hypnotist, to his newly arrived patient Herman, "you look ghastly. What has been happening to you?" "Well, Doc," explains Herman, sprawling out on the couch, "I just got married and my wife Suji is so gorgeous that we make love 5 times every night. And I never get any sleep." "I see," says Snooze. "Well, listen, I will show you how to hypnotize yourself so that you can just go to sleep every night. When you go to bed, you just lie down and tell each part of your body to go to sleep piece by piece." "Thanks, Doc," says Herman. "I will try it." And he staggers home. That night, after a large dinner, Herman goes into the bedroom, leaving Suji to do the washing up. Herman slips under the sheets and starts hypnotizing himself. Toes commands Herman, "Go to sleep." Feet orders Herman, "Go to sleep." Legs directs Herman, "Go to sleep." Body yawns Herman, "Go to sleep." Head sighs Herman, "Go to sleep." Just then, the door opens and Suji glides into the bedroom wearing a tiny see-through nightgown. One of Herman's eyes pops open and slowly absorbs the gorgeous woman climbing into bed. "Quick," he shouts, "everybody wake up."
close your eyes. Feel the body completely frozen. Now look inwards with your total consciousness, with an urgency as if this is the last moment of your life. Deeper and deeper go like an spear. You will reach to the center without fail. The center of your being is also the center of existence. So many roses blossom. So much beauty, such grace and such splendor rejoice in this fortunate moment. The world has forgotten the language and the golden path that leads you to your own treasure. Truth is here. Good is here. Beauty is here. From this source arises everything, and to this source comes back everything. This is the eternal source of existence. Just a small taste of it and you are no more the same person. You start becoming a Buddha. To make it more clear, Nivedano. Relax. Let go of the body and the mind. You are neither. You are just a witness. This witnessing is the very golden key, the master key that opens all the mysteries of existence.
feel the Buddha as deeply, as intimately as possible. The Buddha is another name of your witnessing power. And you have to live it around the clock in all your activities. Be graceful, be aware, behave the way Buddha would have behaved. Go on reminding the whole day that you belong to the transcendental, that you are not part of the mundane existence. Your home is of the eternal, of the sacred. This evening was beautiful in itself, but the presence of 10,000 Buddhas witnessing together has made it especially beautiful. In this witnessing, you have dissolved your individuality. I can see only an ocean of consciousness without any waves. The Buddha Hall has become one oceanic consciousness. This is what makes a place holy. This moment you are at the highest peak of consciousness, of joy, of benediction. Soon you will be called back. Start collecting all the flowers and the fragrance. When you come back, come as a Buddha. Nivedana. Come back, but reminding yourself how Buddha would have come, with grace, with silence, with peace. Sit for a few minutes just to recollect to where you have been, the space, the golden path, this will prepare you for the lion's roar. Buddha has called a man, when he becomes enlightened, to give a lion's roar. This series that we have started today is named Josu, the lions roar. Remember your beauty as a lion, as a tremendous power, as great aloneness, the moment you will roar, all the valleys will echo it. All the hearts which are empty will echo it. One Buddha can trigger off thousands of Buddhas in the world. This is going to be your message. To a dying world, you are the last hope. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Bhagwan.
I can feel your heartbeat, I can feel it in mine. I can feel your heartbeat, I can deep inside of mine. I can feel your heartbeat, I can feel it in mine. I can feel your heartbeat, deep inside of mine. Time of the day or night, as we travel this winding road, you gave me the greatest gift. You made my heart my home. You made my heart my home. I can feel your heartbeat deep inside of mine. I can feel your heartbeat, I can feel it in mine. I can feel your heartbeat deep inside of mine. Any time of the day or night, as we travel this winding road, you gave me the greatest gift. You made my heart my home. I can feel your heartbeat, I can feel it in my heart.